This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns and Chad P.
I originally said cowbell, and the first thing he said was,
but a cowbell's a rock instrument.
What, me?
Yes.
It is a rock instrument.
It's a farm instrument.
Have you ever seen cows, man? They rock.
Class is in.
This is Rock School, once again broadcasting in 3D. Put your glasses on right now. My name is Joe Burns. We are from the campus of Southeastern Louisiana University. Chad Pierce is also in the studio.
Hello.
But as last week, we have once again three guests with us as we do version two of the Rock School Roundtable. To my immediate left, introduce yourself, young man. Who are you?
Dan McCarthy. I'm a physics faculty member here at Southeastern.
And a friend of the radio show.
And that too, very much so.
You bet. All the way on the other side of the big long table, who are you?
Bill Robison. I'm from the Department of History and Political Science.
You bet. And the guy who got me interested in fanfare and has me once a year go up and talk rock and roll. So
that's right. Be doing it again this year.
Just a little bit of hero worship over here, I got to tell you. And another guy I'm really happy to have in the studio. Who are you?
My name is Alan Cannon. I'm a faculty member in the mathematics department.
And I'm looking for a lot of 1970s, 1980s stuff out of you today.
We'll see.
So, let's see. We have questions that were put together. If you didn't catch last week's show, go to the website. Chad, what's the website?
KSLU.org, KSLU.org. There is a Rock School chalkboard on the right-hand side. You can click on that and get all kinds of different things, including archived episodes, and listen to last week's Rock School Roundtable.
Right. We're going to do it again this week with a new group. This is sort of a McLaughlin group situation. We're going to throw out answers to questions that really have no factual answers. Let's begin with this one. Gentlemen, what is your perfect song? A song where, as was said in Amadeus, if you remove one note, the structure will fall. What is the song where if a band redid it, it would have been akin to blasphemy? Dan, what's the perfect song?
Well, first of all, I disagree. I think in rock, you need to be able to redo things. Nothing is sacred. I think part of the idea is that things need to be just continually reinvented and redone.
Redoing is one thing, but copying.
Covering.
No, not copying.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's fine. What I was looking for in a song is something which is a little bit outrageous. Because
okay.
I think rock necessarily has to do that. If it's too serious, then it just isn't that. Also something that ties into some rock roots type thing.
Okay.
And also, because I do love live performances, one that performs really well. And the one that came to me was Whipping Post by the Allman Brothers.
Ooh,
beautiful. Nice. I do love
I like
that
it.
One. Very
like
nice.
It. Let's keep going left. Chad?
I chose Smokin' by Boston. It's got so many great elements in it. It's got that Hammond B3 organ.
Right.
And what made me choose that was this line that said, if you remove one note, the structure will fall. If you take any of those elements out, it's not that song. And anyone who dares to try to copy it should be shot on sight.
On sight?
On sight.
Alan, what do you got?
I chose Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes. It has nothing to do with the vision of John Cusack holding up the boombox in the movie Say Anything. But as Dan said, he does a great live performance of it. And I always like a song with an emotional impact, and that In Your Eyes does that for me.
You know, it's said that Gabriel was the first to actually crowd surf. He's able to back and crowd surf on it. That's probably the song he did it to. Bill.
Well, being a historian, I naturally have to give you more than one answer because we don't do monocausal explanations of anything.
You've got 50 cents for that word. You have 50 cents for that word?
Yeah, I got you. I'll collect it later. My number one choice is actually probably too long to play on an hour-long show. It's King Crimson, Starless. And the reason I picked that is, number one, it's a very beautiful song at the beginning. It becomes very harsh in the middle and then goes back to a just absolutely stunning conclusion. But what I like about it especially is the way it builds up musical tension. I don't know of a single song that does a better job of building up and then releasing tension than that one does. And I urge your listeners, if you haven't heard it and you like old progressive rock, check it out. It's a wonderful song. But for a playable song, okay, I would go with The Beatles' For No One. It's very simple but just absolutely incredibly beautiful song.
And heartbreaking.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's one of those that even after having heard it several thousand times, on the right day, it can still make my eyes a little moist.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of emotion running through the room
really
today,
do.
Early in the show.
You got water here. Tied to the whipping post over here. And I feel like I'm dying.
That's why I'm weeping.
Yeah, exactly.
I picked Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing. I just remember the first time I heard it, I couldn't believe how perfect a song it was. And on top of that, it's long. Same thing with your King Crimson song. And it's normally perfect songs are so short. This thing just kept going and going and going, and it never went south. It's perfect, and it's one of those that I'm sad when it's over. Start it again. I think it's brilliant.
I'm proud of you. You're making progress.
Thank you.
You didn't choose a Van Halen song.
No, I didn't.
You're doing better.
However, there are a few of those. What do you say we play some blues? Let's go Whipping Post.
I love it, guy.
Love it. Rock School.
Tied to the Whip and Post, Allman Brothers right here on Rock School. It's the Rock School Roundtable, where the doctor and I have invited in a few music gurus. Once again, Mr. Alan Cannon, Bill Robison, and Dan McCarthy. Thank you guys so much for coming in. And if you're ready, we're going ahead and fire off question number two. Are you ready?
Yes,
sir.
Sure.
Gentlemen, what is, in your opinion, the worst mistake a band has ever made? Alan, let's start with you.
Well, I don't have a specific answer. Mine was more general because this happens all the time. Personal relationships in a band always get in the way of the music. Van Halen is a perfect example.
You should get out of the blast zone, man.
Another example, you know, the Mamas and the Papas had the same sort of issues as well. And
Fleetwood
so,
Mac.
Fleetwood Mac, who's one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
So we're both treading on thin ice here.
Yeah.
Doc, what you got?
I brought two. I'm gonna do my Bill Robison imitation here. I brought two. Number one is when bands put out greatest hit albums and they put, instead of their biggest hit, they put a live version of it on the greatest hit album. I can't stand that. But the one that probably fits the question, the Beach Boys had just put out Good Vibrations, Pet Sounds, and were ready to just be a juggernaut. And because of problems with Brian Wilson, because of problems with within the band, problems with Columbia Records, they did not put out and complete the next album, Smile, which was to be maybe the most perfect rock album ever. No one will ever know, obviously, but the thought process of it was at the time to be a juggernaut album. And I think not completing it, not finishing it, was maybe the biggest mistake that, at the time, a band could make.
Well, maybe that's why they didn't, because the pressure was on.
No, Wilson went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, says you.
Says me. Says says just about every psychologist in the world.
Dan!
Well, I also have two sort of mistakes. One is, I mean, I think one of my favorite bands of all time is the Rolling Stones, but for some reason in the 60s, they thought they had to copy the Beatles. And the most worst offense of that was when they did their Her Majesty's Satanic Request, their sort of Sgt. Pepper, which was just, in my mind, a train wreck. When they finally got back to what they did and did Exile Main Street,
Need
Sticky
album
Fingers,
cover.
That's when they really realized how great they could be. But I think the biggest mistake, and this is not even a band I think is great, but when Styx suddenly did that whole Mr. Roboto nonsense, it was how this sort of rock pop band could think they could be, you know, Pete Townsend or Pink Floyd or...
They were trying to expand, insane. You know, they were
Well, they expanded all right. Yeah. They expanded right out of the radio. It was a train wreck, and that to me was
I think you're wrong. I think at that time the whole rock music genre was looking around going, why are there no songs about robots?
There was
filling
a need.
They were filling a need.
Especially with Japanese overtones.
Exactly.
Well, there actually was a song about robots on Joe's Garage by Frank Zappa.
That's right.
We won't play that one here.
Hey, I got a better idea. Look at that. Bill, I'm going to go ahead and conclude with you. So if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and throw mine out there because I really like your answer. I think the worst mistake a band ever made was Guns N' Roses and this whole Chinese democracy stuff. Yeah. I mean, they finished up with Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, which just exploded. Yeah. They threw in that spaghetti incident, which was more covers than anything, and I think all bands should at least get a mulligan. And then we waited, and we waited, and we waited. And then we waited, and we waited some more, and we waited some more, and Chinese Democracy comes out. I wasn't impressed. Yeah. And so I haven't forgiven them for that yet. So
terribly overlooked.
That was even Guns N' Roses at that point.
Exactly. It was Axl and some Buckethead and some other guys.
Yeah, when this I first read this question, one of the answers that came to mind was just Axl Rose.
Go ahead, Bill. Wrap it up.
Okay. My worst mistake a band has ever made is the internal feuding that led to the breakup of Frank Zappa's last and best touring band in 1988. Based on the recordings that were made of that band that were subsequently issued, they were absolutely phenomenal. Probably as tight a live unit as I've ever heard. Did a better job of playing Zappa's music than anybody I've ever heard. And it sounded like he was having a great time until the feuding broke it apart.
Too bad.
Was Bozio playing drums for them?
No, it was Chad Wackerman at that point.
But
if you check out Make a Jazz Noise Here or The Best Band You Never Heard in Your Life, that'll give you a good idea of what that band was capable of doing.
What do you want to play?
Let's listen to St. Alfonso's Pancake Breakfast.
Oh, let's do it.
Can't Zappa have a just regular, generic song title? It's always got to be something like that.
No fun.
Zappa, Rock School.
Zappa here on Rock School. We're doing the Rock School Roundtable with some guests here. Let's move on to our next question. Nice, quick, short, simple. What is the best use of a non-rock instrument in a rock song? Of course, the question has to be, what exactly is a non-rock instrument since it's such a wide genre? Now, I got to go to Bill Robison first because didn't we just kill your question?
Yes, you did. Yeah. That was the song, as far as I'm concerned. Ruth Underwood's playing of the marimba and St. Alfonso's Pancake Breakfast, also known as Rollo when it's a pure instrumental, is, for my money, the best use of a non-rock instrument in a rock song.
I've seen her in a couple documentaries about Zappa, and she's shown the handwritten stuff that he's done. Mm-hmm. Amazing, the second chords that he
amazing
would put together.
Amazing composer, and she was an amazing instrumentalist. Just stunning.
Let's go to Chad. What is it, the best use of a non-rock instrument in a rock song?
I didn't bring a particular song, but I'll tell you what instrument I love to hear in rock and roll, and that's the harmonica. I love hearing Steven Tyler break out on the harmonica in some of his songs. John Popper, of course, with Blues Traveler, just rocks the harmonica all the time. For my money, it doesn't get any better.
So you think it's more of a blues instrument?
I think harmonica is solely blues instrument, but since rock and roll has blues roots, they go hand in hand.
Sure. Alan?
Well, the fake answer would be the use of the cowbell in Blue Oyster Cult's Don't Feel the
Thank you.
The Reaper.
Ah,
come on.
That's the fake answer.
Hey, I originally said cowbell, and the first thing he said was, but a cowbell's a rock instrument.
What, me?
Yes.
It is a rock instrument.
It's a farm instrument.
Have you ever seen cows, man? They rock.
No, that's what it is.
Good. Now, the real answer, though, would be in Paul Simon's Graceland album in 1986. He recorded most of it. Well, he recorded it on several different continents, actually, but he used a lot of South African artists and instruments in his recording. I should have a hatred towards this album because when it came out, everybody just wanted to keep calling me Al.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Do you see angels in the architecture? Spinning in infinity?
Yes.
Are you going to throw water
he's
at me?
He's a mathematician. What do you think?
He's high fast. He grabbed that water bottle.
Yeah, I was going to say, am I going to get hit with a water bottle over here? Well, I know what song we're going to play, so let me do mine next. Again, I'm doing my Bill imitation here. Here's four for you. Jackal's use of a chainsaw in Lumberjack.
Nice.
Yeah. The Coke bottle in the Dixie Cups, Ico, Ico. Mm-hmm. Alan Robinson's French Horns at the front of God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. Apparently I'm in a Beach Boys mode here. The Vox Mando guitar doing the introduction of the Beach Boys' Wouldn't It Be Nice. That doom-da-doom-da-doom-da-doom-doom right at the beginning is an electric mandolin, which you can actually fret like a guitar. And I think those are the four best uses of them. Dan, let's play a song by you. What do you got?
Yeah, well, actually, I'd be the French horns in for no one that Bill mentioned earlier is a pretty amazing use of French horn. But I was looking for rock. A true one of the best rock and roll bands ever for me is AC/DC. That's all they do is rock and some of the best. Right. And what do? They bring a bagpipe in there.
Oh,
and a song that's a long way to the top.
Yeah.
And they just don't have bagpipes. The lead singer, Bon Scott, is playing a bagpipe, and he does a bagpipe solo while Angus Young's doing a guitar solo. It is just, and it works. It doesn't sound corny. It just absolutely works. It's an amazing song, and that for me is it. Bagpipes and rock.
Name the song. What are we playing?
It's A Long Way to the Top if you want to rock and roll.
Yes, it is. Rock School. All right, first break here on Rock School. We're doing the Rock School Roundtable, so it's time for a question that doesn't require a song to play. But first, let's go around the room and get everyone's name one more time. Chad Pierce.
No, that's your name. My name's Chad Pierce.
Oh, that's right.
Dan McCarthy over here.
Alan Cannon.
Bill Robinson.
Here it comes. Does rap music belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Me first.
Yes, the kid in the back. Yes.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, God, agree with that?
Belongs in the Rap Hall of Fame.
Oh, I agree. Rap music has nothing to do with rock and roll. If you take its roots all the way back, it's basically rooted in disco more than rock and roll. Started in Bedford-Stuyvesant, New York, with the house parties and the parties in the street, and that's where it should be. You want a Rap Music Hall of Fame? Put it in Bedford-Stuyvesant. Get it out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There it is. There's the gauntlet. Go ahead.
You could have just said no.
No, I'm not going to say no. I got to back it up. I'm in a room with a bunch of high-minded, high-educated people. Go ahead, Dan.
It absolutely belongs there. You're basing everything upon the derivation of music. You could think of many groups in the Hall of Fame, which are more the artsy ones, like, say, a Genesis, for example. Did they start from roots? They started from sort of classically trained type ideas. Rap completely belongs. In that case, get Muddy Waters out of there. Get Bob Marley out of there. I mean, that's the blues. It's not rock. It's the blues. I believe he belongs there. I know, and I believe he does thing. I think you need to look also at the influence music has on everyone else. And I think rap has completely changed the way rock and roll has changed. I mean, I think it's the way it is right now. I think it's... And also, rock to me is not it's a very broad, nebulous, always-changing type of thing. I don't see it as anything binned in. It is meant to... It's meant to offend, and it's meant to move forward, and I like this idea. And I think people just don't like rap.
You know what? No, you know what? You know what? His answer kind of makes more sense than yours.
Save me, Bill.
I might be switching.
Save me, Bill.
Well, I'm afraid I won't.
come on.
I'm sort of in the middle on this one. I don't necessarily think that all rap belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think some of it probably does, particularly when the rappers use live bands. And when they work in conjunction with other bands, and they're both very good. You know, an example I would give you is Public Enemy and Anthrax working together. That's rock and roll to me. It may use rap techniques, but it's a very rock and rollish
song. Is that enough to push the band into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, though? It's the Hall of Fame.
I think Public Enemy probably deserves to be there on their own merits. I don't think that there's very many rap groups that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame because so many of them are derivative. But Public Enemy had something to say. NWA had something to say. It made a lot of people mad. That's, as Dan says, that's what rock and roll does.
In that case, put Beethoven in. He upset people at the time.
Not putting people in just because they offend.
Well,
that's not what he said. He said the derivative. I remember that word. He said derivative.
If we put ELO in there, we'll be putting Beethoven in.
Yeah, Alan, help.
Okay, I agree with Bill that there may be...
Help.
Let me finish. I agree with Bill that there may be some instances where some rap artists, in particular, if they have a rock and roll flavor in certain instances. Yeah. But I agree with you that in general, I don't think rap belongs in there. Somebody like Muddy Waters, I mean, there's a specific category to get in called early influences. Yes. That's where I think you find the blues and that sort of music.
I mean, I think that's why Johnny Cash is in there, because Johnny Cash was a sort of rocking country type guy.
Rockabilly, right.
Of course, he's in the Country Hall of Fame where he belongs, but he's also in there. I think the public, any Beastie Boys completely belong. They do play their own instruments. They write songs, tremendously influential. And I think there's even some modern guys that are going to get in there, too. I think Jay-Z will get in there, no question.
Well, let me ask this. So we've solved it.
You've got a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You've got a Country Hall of Fame. How come there is no Hip Hop Hall of Fame?
There will be. I'm sure.
Probably. I agree with you.
I mean, I think there will
be. With you.
Why did it take so long for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I mean, that only
because Cleveland couldn't get
only
Cleveland
like
couldn't get the bond.
Cleveland couldn't
get the bond. Cleveland deal.
I mean, ABBA's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I know that's just criminal.
And I think you have to make a distinction too between when rap was rap. It actually was kind of edgy. Now that it's become hip hop. It's all about slick commercial production. None of that stuff belongs in the Hall of Fame or any kind of Hall of Fame.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's all about rock bands right now. It's all about grills and bling and all that.
It's not
stuff,
all about. There's a lot out there that's not that way. There's a lot about. And if you look at popular rock right now, most of those guys don't stand a chance and they shouldn't belong in there. So I think every genre has their real players, leaders, the guy that's changed the game, and most of it stinks.
Well,
but most of it's not in
Maybe we should go with the words of Neil Young. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is full. Close the nomination process. Hello, KLSU. Thanks for running the radio show.
Hello, KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana. Thanks for being part of the Rock School Radio Network.
Back in a minute with one more question right here on Rock School. Coming out of the first break here on Rock School, let's talk about something that's not specifically a song. We went to Facebook and asked the friends of the Rock School show on Facebook if they would give in questions to the Rock School Roundtable. And this is the one that I thought was one of the betters. To the panel, what is the greatest rock and roll landmark? Alan, what's your best rock and roll landmark?
The first thing that came to my mind was the crosswalk in Abbey Road. Even if the people were not there, even if you saw a photo of it without people there, you would automatically put the Beatles walking across it.
Have you been there? Have you done it?
I have not.
Guess who sadly has done that? Me. Guess who tried to put himself in every position
Did you take your
together.
Shoes off?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you should.
That's because he's not
I didn't
dead.
Think about that.
My colleague, Craig Sossier, takes a group to London every summer, and one of the things they do is they go down and take their pictures at Abbey Road.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Did they take somebody and set them way off on the right? The tourists they captured?
Craig is such a Beatles fan, I wouldn't put it past him to do that.
Chad, what do you got?
I have Graceland, more specifically Elvis Presley's grave.
You know his name's misspelled.
It is.
Yeah, so he's not there.
He's not there. I mean, he's not there.
He's still alive. Dan, where do we go?
Yeah, just going back to my comment earlier about how I really like live music and the performance, I thought of one of the most classic performance venues was the Fillmore, which just, when Bill Graham was running it, bringing together so many different kinds of music and just legendary concerts. A lot of the musicians said it was a crummy place. It had bad acoustics, this and that, but it brought out incredible music. And
so many albums.
One after another, and they're great albums, and it just, I think, pushed live music and rock to a whole new level. That maybe not that one place, but that was kind of the epicenter of that in many ways.
You bet. I'll tell you mine, and then we're going to get to Bill, who picked out the song for this time around. One of the greatest 2 days, you talk about where have you traveled to. One of the greatest 2 days of my traveling life was walking up and down the Sunset Strip, West Hollywood, California. I went into the Whiskey, the Rainbow Club, the Roxy, and it's not on the Sunset Strip, but it's a couple off, the Troubadour, where Van Halen was signed by Mo Austin in the back room. I mean, I didn't get to the back room, but God bless them, they let me in. There was nobody there, and I stood on the stage, and, you know, my wife could have cared less, but I'm in the Whiskey bar. I went to all the places and just loved it to death. Bill, where is it?
Well, first of all, accolades for working Van Halen into that one.
Thank you.
And of course, we know Elvis is not in that grave because Mojo Nixon told us that. But my landmark is St. Peter's Church, Woolton, Liverpool, which is the place where John Lennon and Paul McCartney first met each other. Lennon's band was playing there. McCartney showed up, insisted on sitting in, and the rest, as they say, is history.
And Lennon's band was named?
The Moondogs, I believe.
There you go. Ooh, very nice. And what Beatles song would you like to play?
Well, rather than one of the really familiar ones, I would like to suggest And Your Bird Can Sing, which is interesting because, as far as I know, it's the first song to use twin lead guitars, something which became standard in the late 60s and 70s and still is to some extent. So it's a really fine song as well.
Brilliant. Let's play it. Rock School.
Always a good day when you can play the Beatles here on Rock School. It's the Rock School Roundtable. I'm Chad P., Dr. Joe Burns, Bill Robinson, Alan Cannon, and Dan McCarthy make up our panel of music gurus. And I'm going to go ahead and continue in my negative, pessimistic mood and ask you this question. Gentlemen, what is, in your opinion, the worst thing to happen to music between the time you began really listening and right now? And I'll actually start. I think that bands that now rely on heavy, heavy distortion and screaming the F word just to push sales, it's probably the worst thing.
Like Limp Bizkit?
Like Limp Bizkit and Korn and bands like that. You know, Wes Borland for Limp Bizkit is an unbelievably talented guitar player. Mm-hmm. There is no need for him to distort that guitar to the level that he does. And then you have no talented Fred Durst come out and F this, F that, and the crowd goes wild. I think that's crap. I really do.
Yeah, if you start getting into the album, what is it, Hot dog flavored
chocolate
water.
Chocolate starfish and a hot dog flavored water.
If you know what they're talking about, you know, come on. What are you, 10?
Exactly. That's my exact thought.
Well, it's like the difference between Richard Pryor and some of his imitators. Richard Pryor used profanity in an organic way in his stories, and then other people took the message that, what's funny is cursing.
The
material behind it has no basis. The same thing is true of what you're talking about with music.
It's toilet humor.
Agreed.
You know, and it's just pointless. Dan.
This is more related to just the format of music, but I really thought that as great as CDs and digital music are now, it's kind of too bad because I think it took away the idea of the album, the whole idea of this long piece of music. And that's one thing rock and roll did is it started with nothing but singles, but then bands like the Beatles and, you know, you think about Pink Floyd and The Who, they really started developing this idea of a long album. And I remember when I was growing up, you'd sit down and listen to the whole album. You'd think about this thing. There was a continuity. And then it's now you can just download individual singles. And that's really what's happening is they're not looking at this. A couple bands, admittedly, are doing the album. Right. Green Day, for one, is an example of a good current band that is still writing albums. But it's still about what the single is. And I think that's unfortunate.
There was something to going to the record store. You know, the old record store in Cleveland, it smelled a certain way. It was, you almost got it was a badge of honor to almost be made fun of because you still liked Billy Squire or something like that. It was great to be there. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree totally.
Bill, what you got?
For me, it's, and I've probably been listening longer than anybody in the room, it's a recent development, this heavy, heavy reliance on auto-tuning and what I call gratuitous melisma. That is, you know, vocal gymnastics.
Like that word.
So that pretty much all of the music on the radio now sounds like it's cut from the same piece of cloth. I find very little to distinguish among most of it. And it's not just a case of me being an old man because my kids hate it too.
Yeah, maybe it's because the artists are no longer in charge.
Yeah.
The the people who are selling it.
Right, you lose the singer's voice. Now, in some cases, that's probably a good thing, which is why they're auto-tuning. But if the singer's got a good voice, you're not going to know.
Right. You know, the record companies kind of know what specific sound they think will sell, and whether you come in with an original idea or not, this is what we want to hear from you, and then it all comes out kind of sounding the same.
Yeah, we were talking about robots earlier, and that's what a lot of it sounds like. Very whiny adolescent robots.
That doesn't really work, though, if you think about it, because look at Adele. That's her voice, and she's amazing, and look at the response. So I think it's misguided to try to program everyone's voice.
Oh, I agree.
People love good voices. Well,
these bands. Don't give me another Keisha or Keisha.
Kesha.
Who gives a care?
No, please mispronounce.
Well, here's kind of a silly example I'll get made fun of, but my wife and I like to watch American Idol. There's a guy that's in the top five, and he is known for his originality. Everybody's going in this direction, and he's way over here, and he has not been in the bottom three facing elimination yet. So there is something to say for that Adele-like talent, originality.
Yeah, but that's got to sneak
willing
through.
To take that chance.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Alan, what you got?
Well, as a side note, I'd made the comment that Dan said about there are no more record stores. That was a joy as a teenager to earn save up $6 so I could go buy an LP, look at all the artwork, thumb through all of the singles, see what was out there. That was just a pleasure as a teenager. You can't do that anymore. Yeah. But my worst thing to happen to music is it's not always about the talent, as we've been talking about. If you have the look or the electronic enhancement or... I mean, somebody like Mama Cass or Janis Joplin would have a lot harder time making it nowadays, despite the fact that they were talented.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not pretty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they don't look like Britney Spears. Mm-hmm. All done. Like,
Mama Cass, actually, I thought was pretty. She just had a little weight problem, whereas Janis Joplin was just not very attractive.
Too bad.
Doc, we swore we'd never get political, but go ahead.
Well, I think it's Reagan's radio deregulation. It started under Reagan, and then more deregulation came, and what it's done is led to overt radio ownership by Clear Channels of the world. And what it's done is basically destroyed local radio and has led to radio becoming something that is more interested in profit than leading audiences to what is great and allowing for this concept of the record companies being in charge of what we listen to. Jocks aren't in charge anymore.
Sure.
And it's meant the death of new rock radio. In New York City, there is no new rock radio station. The largest radio market in the world. No new rock radio station. So it's Reagan's deregulation. What I think it was.
And the stations will tell you, we have to make money. We have to keep the lights on. But in this case, those are getting to be some very expensive lights.
Don't even get me started on being hired as a disc jockey. You're not hired as a jock anymore. You're hired as a voice artist 1 to 2 days a week to voice track your stuff and then AmScray. Mm-hmm. And it's not good.
Yeah, I agree.
Can we play a radio song?
Absolutely.
Radio. Here's Elvis Costello, Rock School. Time for the second break here on Rock School as we do the round table. We just did the worst thing to happen to music between the time you began listening and right now. Well, we're into the break. We needed a question that doesn't really pitch a song. So let's do the best thing to happen to music between the time you really began listening and now. Alan, I'm pointing to you.
I'm going to contradict myself. I spoke about the demise of the record store, but I think the best thing to happen was the elimination of vinyl.
Oh, you're breaking my
heart. Only from a personal experience, because it never failed. I would bring home a brand new spanking record, get ready to put it on the turntable, and I would drop it. It would roll across a room, get a scratch, and it would be completely ruined.
You didn't have any, you didn't, go back to, like Peach's record store? It came out like this.
No.
It was scratched.
It was just wasted money.
What you call honest.
Yeah. Or my favorite song on the album would get the scratch.
Sure, because you're constantly dropping the needle and such. Yeah. Bill, what do you got?
Mine is inexpensive, high-quality home recording equipment. both because I'm a musician myself and I like playing around with the stuff, and it's so much cheaper and easier to use than tape decks used to be, mm-hmm. but also because it's a way of independent musicians getting out from under the thumb of the big studios and record companies. There are people like Ani DeFranco, for example, or to some extent Omar Rodriguez-Lopez of the Mars Volta, who pretty much control the whole process from beginning to end. And for even less affluent artists, it's a way to get started. There are guys out there now who have commercial records that they made on GarageBand.
Yeah.
It's that good. So I think that's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with that. I still remember my little four-track cassette recorder. But I'm gonna stay with the technology. I think it's the iPod. I still remember when I had huge boxes of Peaches Record Store, you know, I guess swag to hold all my albums. Then I got rid of my albums, and then I built wall things to hold all of my CDs. Now I got my iPod. I looked at it this morning just for the show. Over 5,500 songs. Every Rock School show we recorded was, we're over what, 265 now?
Yep.
So that's 265 hours of music on that thing, plus every picture that I want of my kids, plus data, and there it sits in my hand. I can take it anywhere I want. I absolutely love it. And a demise of radio, there it is.
Yeah.
But it's not the iPod's fault. If radio gave people something to listen to, they wouldn't go to the iPod.
That's right.
Dan, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said the worst thing to music to happen was digital media, and I think I'm going to say the best thing to happen to music is also digital media, like the iPod and also the internet, because like Bill's saying, people can create things very cheaply. Again, to go back to my penchant for live recordings, there's a lot of bands I like Fish and Government Mule. They have their great bands.
You said that word.
What,
said
live?
Word.
You don't like live recording?
Fish.
They're fantastic.
He
okay.
hates fish.
That's
love
fine.
Fish.
Is after every show, the next day on the net, you can download their show for $10, and it's very well produced and sounds great. Government Mule's that way. There's a lot of bands that do that, so it's a wonderful thing. And not to mention, we talk about radio. I get my radio through the internet right now. I
so
just go and I listen to what the BBC has great things. There's all sorts of international things. I can turn it on and listen to it. So it's incredible. It's just
and there's YouTube.
It's a different
I
world.
Concur.
I podcast a lot of radio stations out of L.A.
For sure.
I do. Chad, what do you got?
If you were listening last week, you should recall that I said the first song that I ever heard was Looking Out My Back Door by CCR.
Right.
I was about 5 or 6 years old, and then my sister bought the single to Sweet Child of Mine. That's when I really kind of started paying attention to this stuff that they call rock and roll. In 1987, there was an album that was put out called Permanent Vacation by a band called Aerosmith.
Yeah, comeback album.
I discovered Aerosmith, and I can honestly say that I've been with them ever since. That's the best thing that's ever happened to music for me from that time until now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I still remember the first time I heard Van Halen. I went to a party and had never heard them. And the young girl that was throwing the party said, you know, have you heard this band? She dropped the needle on Van Halen 1, and I still remember it was the same thing. Clouds part, single beam of light, mm-hmm. you know, mind-changing, soul-cleansing. You know.
Well, Joe, on the next show, we'll play some fish, and you'll have the same. I look forward to it.
Hey, I'm in charge of what gets played. Radio Universidad, Salamanca, Spain, does not like fish. Thanks for running the radio show.
WBSD in Burlington, Wisconsin, plays fish.
Back in a minute, Rock School. Once again, thanks to our panel, Bill Robison, Alan Cannon, Dan McCarthy, and of course the perennial guy that sits next to me, Chad Pierce. Let's finish the way they always do on the McLaughlin Report. Let's just go around the room. Predictions. Chad.
I predict that eventually there will be founded a hip-hop Hall of Fame.
Probably. Dan, go ahead.
I think that 50 years now, when they do top lists, the Beatles will still be the best band and Hendrix will still be the best guitarist.
Probably. Because it's going to be sort of hip to
it's
say.
It's one of those
too.
Things. I don't see how it can change. Yeah.
My prediction is that there will be, in the same way in the 1980s that country music was founded as a true top 40 type format, some owner group will decide to turn radio back into a top 40 hit-making group and will at least take a shot at it and stop all of this silly satellite-delivered stuff. Somebody will take a shot at it. Alan.
The Tom Tom Club's Genius of Love will be continue to be the most sampled song in the history of mankind.
Great song. Great song. Love
it. Wow. Bill, what do you got?
Well, to be contrary here, I think radio will continue to splinter and will become largely irrelevant to people who actually like music enough to buy more than two or three CDs a year. The record companies will cease to control anything except the flavor of the week pop that appeals to very young listeners. The improvement of inexpensive recording equipment and the accessibility offered by the internet will encourage real musical innovators to put their songs on the market. Live performance in large venues will price itself out of existence, except in the case of a few superstars, and this will help level the playing field for talented but lesser-known artists.
Wow, I wish I had done something.
So Joe can't look for a job, then, no. Is that what you're saying? Joe
better keep his day job. Joe's got a job.
Joe better keep his day job, right?
Wow. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Our pleasure. Wonderful. Maybe we can do it again.
I hope so.
Or feel free to come up with your own titles, playlists, and come on in and see us. Love to have you all back. I think it was a real good show.
I think so, too.
Thank you so much. And Dan actually suggested this one since we're talking about the future. In the year 2525. Class is dismissed.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive.